This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, and you are tuned into Wells Tech, episode 431 for Tuesday, February 9th, 2016. Each and every week, we gather together to talk about technology and ministry and try and figure out what's the best use of that to share the gospel, and helping me do that each and every week, Mrs. Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you today?
I am awesome, Martin. Nice to join you again for Wells Tech. I'm really looking forward to today's show. This has been a fun one to get ready for.
Yeah, so we probably should just do a quick intro for what we're going to do today. We teased it a little bit last week, but I think the source of this particular show, we've done a few of these kinds of shows where we go through our phones and we kind of share what our top apps are, those kinds of things. We've done our favorite picks. This is kind of in answer to some requests that I get every once in a while. What tools do you use? What technology tools are kind of your go-to day in, day out tools from your computer? What computer do you use? What kind of peripherals? What kind of software do you install? So as you set up a computer, what are those kind of must-haves that help you get the job done? So I thought, well, we're kind of in the beginning of the year yet. Why don't we just take some time where you and I both kind of do an inventory and we figure out what are those things that we use and how we feel about them, and maybe make some recommendations or words of caution as we go through and give everybody kind of a little peek into our own little personal technology worlds.
Right. Not claiming to be the best at it, but I do enjoy working with technology, and I juggle a lot of different technologies, and so having the ability to share what makes my work more efficient, even if it shaves off a few seconds here and there, that's a lot of fun. For me, when I go to conferences, Martin, I don't know if you're like this, but I'm kind of on a stealthy mission, and I evaluate what the presenters are using in terms of delivering their presentations, or maybe I'm looking at their browser intently trying to figure out which are their extensions they use in their browser or whatever it may be. And so this is a little bit of that kind of insight for our listeners.
Yep, I'm totally with you. That's one of the things that I kind of take note of when I'm sitting in a conference room where, you know, I've got somebody who's maybe got many more presentation hours than I have and kind of does it for a living maybe. And what tools are they using? Again, it's whatever you can do to kind of save that time, be a good steward of your time, and figure out what the best technologies are. And that's kind of neat in the business that we're in. You get to play around with some of that stuff, and hopefully we can share some of that knowledge. Speaking of knowledge, I think a lot of our listeners would fall in this category, this kind of new worker that probably didn't exist in the same form, 20, 30 years ago because of the invention of technologies, computer and the internet, those kinds of things. Information workers. You and I are both information workers, and I think most of our listeners are people that deal with information. They dispense information, they do research, they capture, they write all kinds of things around information. And there's some tool sets that you need to be able to do that, including your computer and software and the internet and all the peripherals that go along with that. And couple of things as I'm thinking about being the best information worker I can be in thinking about what I'm going to use and what I want in front of me every day. Those are kind of important decisions. It's kind of like the construction worker and his hammer or his screwdriver. You can have a good one and have a good experience and be good at what you do, or you can have a bad one and fight it all day and just kind of dread going to the work site. And that's, I think, the same with information workers. If you've got tools that you just are kind of surviving with, it's just not good. You don't look forward to it. You struggle with it. You waste time trying to troubleshoot it. You get frustrated. You're just kind of in a bad you just have a bad attitude as you go through the day. So information worker tools are kind of important. And you want to get good ones, but you don't want to overspend, certainly. But you also want to get ones that get out of the way, too, that they're not the center. They're not the reason that you do what you do. But they just kind of work well, and they kind of become a part of you. I know I feel that way about some of the tools that I use. It's just kind of a part of me. And if I don't have it, then I'm challenged to get the job done. And that applies then to budgeting for it. I know a lot of congregations and schools have tight budgets, but I would encourage those that kind of manage those budgets to think about what you're giving the workers that are using the tools that you're giving them. They have to live with these tools, and you want to make that, you want to make them as productive as possible and really be enablers so that they can, they can go forth and do what you're asking them to do with as little disruption as possible. Just kind of a little bit of my soapbox before we get started, because I've seen so many churches and schools try and go low budget on computing, and then they struggle with the peripherals, and the trackpad sucks, and the screen is hard to look at, and it falls apart after 2 years, and you do it all over again. Don't do that. Kind of make budget to last, I guess, is probably the encouragement.
That sounds like a great soapbox to be on, Martin. And I'm just thinking, if it makes you smile big monkey grins, it's got to be a good tool. I'll get to that later. So just a little bit of foreshadowing.
Yeah, I think most of us know what that all means. So why don't we jump right into it? So we've kind of grouped these in some larger categories, and then we'll kind of dig into some of our favorites and compare and contrast what the both of us use. So we've got hardware right at the top of the list. So that's kind of mission control. That's where everything begins. You really need that good computing device to kick things off. So why don't I start? Mine's a little more complicated because I have to actually live in both a PC world and a Mac world. A lot of you know that I work on the Wells mobile app, and I do the Wells yearbook and those kinds of things. And if you're publishing an app to the iTunes store, you actually have to use a Mac to be able to do that. Apple, in their crafty marketing approach, says, well, you can't use a PC to publish apps to our store. So I need kind of both. So what I've tried to do with the laptop that I have, which is a MacBook Pro, and I like the little larger screen, the 15-inch screen, and I've had this particular one for 2.5 years, get a powerful enough computer that I could run both systems on it. So actually I use one computer for the most part that runs Mac as its native operating system or host operating system. And then I use a tool called Parallels that will allow me to run Windows inside of that Mac. So I really have two computers in one. So it's a little heavy. I mean, it's a little bit bigger than I would normally carry around, but because of some of the extra needs I have, this is kind of the sweet spot for me. So I got as much RAM as I could. And, you know, an SSD drive, I guess, would be an encouragement for everybody to think about that is maybe still struggling with a spinning hard disk. I know, Sally, you have an SSD in your computer as well. And just the speed at which that thing starts up, you would wonder how you lived without it for previous years. So that's kind of mission central for me, and that's the MacBook Pro 15-inch late 2013 model. I don't know. You can't buy some of the things that we're going to talk about, but you can clearly get whatever the next model is. So.
Yeah. For me, I'm an all Windows girl. I spent maybe a year and a half in the Mac ecosystem as well, doing some Parallels and things like that. I'm hearing a little echo, Martin. Anyway, but I switched back. I'm running an Asus UX301 13-inch laptop. And again, it's a 2013 model as well. It's got the SSD drive. It is actually very special in the fact that it has a 4K display. They call it quad HD display, and it's a touch screen. I can tell you that it can display a lot more than my eyes can see on that 13-inch screen.
Yes. So, especially on a 13-inch screen, I think, right?
Right, exactly. So, so I don't use it quite at the full resolution that it's capable of, but very crystal clear display and really great interface, touchscreen with the Windows 10 operating system and interaction and stuff. I love the speed of it booting. I think it's just a super solid machine. It's really thin. I have a picture of it here I should share. That's another thing that I recommend is lightweight and thin, because like you alluded to at the beginning of the show, we are a different type of worker than used to exist maybe 20 years ago. And it's nice to be able to just open up your laptop on your lap in a cafe, if that's what you want to do or whatever. Just really portable, not something that's going to weigh you down like a boat anchor to carry it around with you and stuff. And been really pleased with it. Coupled with that smaller laptop screen, though, my big win of my setup is the large 4K monitor that I have to go along with it. So this is mine is an Asus monitor as well, with 3840 by 2160 resolution. I'm talking, I have a vast monitor in front of me, and that's probably, if I had to tell you one thing that makes me more productive, it's having screen resolution and space to spread things out and do the work I need to do across multiple windows. So I love the monitor. Again, just crystal clear display and very versatile. It can turn portrait if you want it to. It can do all kinds of things. So really nice monitor. I really enjoy it.
I would totally agree or second your thought on the external display. I use the an older version of this Apple Thunderbolt display, and does the same thing, 27 inches. So I guess get as much screen real estate, that's probably the message, get as much screen real estate as you can afford, because it does boost productivity. So I will, you know, park my MacBook on the, you know, side of my desk and then basically use the main monitor as the, you know, the one I look at the most, because I can put two kind of full applications side by side, and the latest, maybe I can even demonstrate that here, the latest software release for OS 10 allows you to do split screen. So you can, that won't work here with the screen sharing, but you can throw it to one side or the other and then have something, have other options come up on the the blank side, so you can do side by side with just a couple keystrokes. So, very I think very fruitful experience if you can do that, because you know a lot of times for our show prep we're doing exactly that. We've got the need to have you know mind map open and a web browser and some other things, and it's just good to have that screen real estate.
Right. I'm sharing my main screen right now, so those that are watching can see. I'm able to open up a browser window and have the Google Hangout window open. And then over on my laptop, which you aren't seeing, I have the mind map open. So it just opens up a lot of space for me. Normally, I would make the main screen fill the entire screen, but for ease of sharing in the Hangout, I make it kind of a short window. But lots and lots of space there.
Yep. So let's talk a little bit about peripherals, you know, those things that you attach to your computer that make you a little bit more productive, keyboard, mouse, anything special there that you want to share, Sally?
Yeah, I think for a mouse, I just use a really cheap little Logitech USB mouse, but the keyboard is a great component, and I use a Bluetooth keyboard, so it's wireless. It's actually got a nice little chiclet kind of feel to the typing area. It's small, lightweight, and it actually will pair with multiple devices, so I can use it and just flick a button to switch to use it with my mobile device, for instance, if I want to use the same keyboard. So very versatile Logitech illuminated keyboard, which is nice for me. I do a lot of hunting and pecking in the dark, and so it's got backlight to it as well. So been really happy with that one. The brand is Logitech K810 is the one that I use.
Yeah, one thing, I've used that in the past too. One thing I really like about that one is that it doesn't require batteries. You can charge it through USB, micro USB. And the charge lasts a really long time. You really have to plug it in very, very infrequently, and that's kind of nice and travels well. And I would agree. I've really come to like the kind of the chiclet approach versus the full, you know, like the old style keyboards where you've got pretty raised caps and a lot of long travel on the keys. I guess I'm just used to it because I'm going back and forth between just typing on the laptop and typing on that external keyboard, and to make them as similar as possible is helpful in just kind of muscle memory and just kind of the general feel of it as well. Mm-hmm. For mine, I just stick with the Apple Bluetooth stuff, and this is one of their, I think this was their first keyboard, so they've got. This does have batteries. That's one of the negatives of this. I don't have the new one, but the new one looks more like a wedge, and it is rechargeable, which is probably a good feature to have. Here I've got to keep a couple of AAA batteries around to replace this. And then I use the what they call the Magic Mouse. But actually, I'm thinking about trading this in, so to speak, for a trackpad, because I really like the feel of the Apple trackpads. They're better than any other computer that I've ever used, and just some of the gestures that you get with a trackpad are really productivity boosters, screen, app switching, those kinds of things. So I've really gotten used to the trackpad, and I'm less and less comfortable with the mouse. And I guess I'm finding as I use the computer more and as I get a little bit older, I get a little bit of stress, in my right hand as I overuse the mouse, and I don't find that as much on the trackpad, because I guess you can use different finger combinations, so it's not that repetitive thing that you would get with certainly with your index finger or your middle finger when you're using a mouse. So.
And that's why we say there's two of us on this podcast, because everybody's different. And I've never been a trackpad person, although you make a really good point. I always feel the repetitive stuff in my shoulder. But, good reason to give it a try.
Yep.
Good stuff.
And because we are podcasters, we have other peripherals that require us to get a microphone set up. A lot of you may not have a need for that, but I think more and more good input audio input device is necessary as you're recording whatever that may be. So my setup, because I use a Mac, I use a digital device called a Duet. And let me see if I can just pull that up so I can share that. A Duet, what do they call this? Apogee Duet. Audio USB audio interface. Let me share my screen here quick. And this allows, and I didn't pay that much, but these are not cheap. One thing that this really does a good job of is has multiple inputs. So I can take this on the road, hook up multiple kinds of microphones, and I have total control over the levels, which is really important when you're in kind of conditions that you're not quite sure what you're going to get. So this is Mac only. There are a lot cheaper devices that are on the Windows platform, but this really works well and has done a good job for me, as well as the microphone, which is a Heil PR40. So if you're looking for a good all-purpose microphone, either for podcasting or even in an environment like a church, if you need a microphone that sits on the lectern or the pulpit, that's not a bad choice. And we'll have links to all these in the show notes, of course.
Yep, I use a Yeti Blue mic, and we'll have a link to that as well. I've been using this same mic, I don't know, at least 5 years, I would guess. And it's held up really well and does a great job. We'll use it in different scenarios. It has different settings. Right now it's recording just as if one person's speaking, but you can open it up to pick up sounds broader than that. But I can tell you, there's people right outside my door making noise right now, and typically this mic won't pick it up. It's very sensitive to the settings and to my voice and that kind of thing. So I've been really pleased with that. The other component of it for podcasting is a really high quality webcam, and I use the Logitech HD Pro webcam C920, a very popular webcam, and I can see the price has dropped. It used to be $100 and now just $65. So
nice.
Very, very nice, high def, 1080p, widescreen webcam, gives us great quality.
Couple things on that mic, the Yeti mic, those people that tuned in maybe a couple weeks ago when I was up in New Ulm, we used that mic, I believe, for our four-person interview. We had James Karlofsky and Jim Grimwald on, and then the two of us, and we just set it. The nice thing is you have different settings. So you can have a stereo setting or a cardioid setting, or I think there's four settings altogether, which opens up different microphones inside the mic, and worked really well. Second, on that webcam, that's the exact same webcam we use for the Interactive Faith series. So we send that out to our presenters, and I actually have them use the microphone on that webcam for their main microphone. We're trying to just keep it as simple as possible, so they don't have to plug in all kinds of stuff. And it's good enough to get some good quality, not only image or video, but also audio. So I think it's hard to find a better webcam for the price. So that was was it C920? I think so.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
So if you're looking for a good webcam at now a very reasonable price, that's the way to go.
And you can definitely tell the difference when you use like a built-in webcam from the computer or whatever. It's a really high-quality image compared to some, so yeah. Worth it.
I just use the webcam that's built right into the MacBook. It's got a good quality camera as well. It just keeps things simple. So, speaking of webcams and peripherals, we should probably maybe talk a little bit about our desks or our desktops, because there's things that sit there as well besides those computers and input devices. I can start. One of the things that I use to prop up my computer itself and kind of keep some air under it and also give the screen a little height is something called the M-Stand laptop stand by Rain Design. And this is just a little piece of, it's actually bigger than it looks here on the screen, of course, but it's it's made of aluminum. It's a unibody design, and it simply has kind of a U-shape, those of you that are listening at home, flat surface that you put your laptop on, and it raises it maybe 6 inches. Gives it a natural tilt, and then you can get it up maybe a little bit closer to eye level as you put the laptop on it. There's a picture of it as you put the computer on it, and then that little gap below it, you can tuck a keyboard and other things underneath it for some storage. I think the price has dropped to $43 for that. Really well designed. I use it for every podcast. I'm using it now just to get the camera up a little bit higher and allows you to get a little bit more surface space on your desk for mousing and where your keyboard can go, those kinds of things, versus the laptop just kind of taking up that big rectangular space that they obviously want to take up. So probably not a bad investment if you want to get a little bit more room and get a little bit of air circulation for the laptop as well.
So I have an interesting late-breaking addition to our mind map, Martin. I called it ergonomics because in regard to your desk, at least a big trend in the folks that I know is to have a stand-up desk or have the capability of going from a sit-down desk to a stand-up desk. And that is something that I haven't been able to master yet. My husband has a stand-up desk and other people I know do, but I haven't. However, I made it to the Treasure House this weekend. And those of you that are familiar with New Ulm probably know about the Treasure House. It's a resale shop. It operates to support our local Lutheran High School and other charities and things within the Wells. And I found my very own version of what you just said. And it actually raises my computer to a standing height. And it's was all of $3. So it's very economical. And these pictures that I had my husband take really quickly, because I thought of it right before the podcast, don't really show, but there is height to this. So it's a lovely red color, wonderful addition to my office. And I think it probably was a music stand, like a tabletop music stand is what it was designed for. So it has a little lip to it. But when I set my laptop on it, it wasn't quite enough height to that lip to hold it there. And so you probably would guess that I would work 3D printing into this conversation. there's a handy little guy that I know that designed a 3D printed some extra supports for it to give it just a little bit more lift so that it definitely holds the laptop securely. So I'm very anxious to begin using my very own stand-up desk with my laptop. And I think it'll be good for situations where I don't necessarily need the big screen as well, where I just need to focus and do some typing, you know, crank out some narrative of some kind or whatever, then I can easily and quickly boost my laptop up to that height and stand up for a few minutes and get some cardiovascular or health benefit from standing at my desk as well. Have you tried the stand-up desk phenomenon, Martin?
I have not. I have not. I know a lot of people who do, and I know we're in the network services department there at MLC. They all have these stand-up desk arrangements, and by all accounts, they love it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm looking forward to giving it a try. I'm guessing I'll get tired pretty quick, but that's okay. You know, a little bit's better than none. So my brand new stand-up desk debuted here on Wells Tech for our viewers and at a cost of $3 from the Treasure House.
Nice.
There Very you go. Nice.
Another thing that's on my desk that everybody really needs to invest in, and that is a power strip. Sometimes they're tucked out of sight, but sometimes you need to have some kind of way to plug things in on top of your desk rather than kind of snaking things down over the edge of the desk or looking for a USB port that doesn't maybe exist on your computer. This little device, and you can get these for cheaper. This one is straight from the manufacturer called Legrand. This is called the Desktop Power Center Work Surface Portal with power and USB outlets, the WSR320-S, if that's any easier to remember. But what it is, and I can't make this any bigger, let me see if I can make this a little bit bigger here. There we go.
If only you had a trackpad for easy zooming, huh?
Yeah, it's not going to let me do it here. Yeah. Sorry about that. Anyway, and we'll have a link in the show notes. But what it is, it's a little box. Oh, it's about 6 inches wide by 3 inches deep by 2 inches high. And what it's made to do is it's got a little insert in the bottom that goes through those holes that are often drilled in the top of a desk to route cables and such. So this stands or gets connected via kind of a clamp on the bottom so that you don't see that, but then you hook it up to a power supply or wall outlet so you don't even see any cords. And then this one happens to provide 3 electrical outlets and 2 USB ports. So if you're plugging in to charge your iPad or iPhone, or you just need to plug in something else to regular power, whether that's your laptop or whatever, you've got it right on the top of your desk, and then it does all the surge suppression and those kinds of things that you absolutely need to take care of when you're working with equipment like this. So this one looks nice on the desktop, so you don't have to snake up the ugly beige, 5-prong strip and sit that on top of your desk. This is a lot more elegant. And I think I got it for, none of these are real cheap, but I think I got it for about $50 at Home Depot or Menards, something like that. But that is, I think, a great purchase and kind of, obviously, helps you do safe computing, but also kind of looks nice on the desk. So that's from Well, it's the company's LeGrand, but it says Wire Mold trademark on the top. So I'm not sure which one it is, but the link in the show notes will get you to the right spot there.
Awesome. I had to giggle because I'm looking at my ugly beige power strip on my desktop right here. So
my wife came in when we first moved into the building and said, you're not going to clutter up that desk with all kinds of cords and cables and stuff. And I had to promise her I wouldn't do that. So.
Well, I'm not doubting that Debbie Spriggs has good taste, for
she
sure.
Does, yeah. anything else on your desktop or in your ergonomics category that you want to share?
Not worth mentioning at this point, no, sir. So we should move on to software, I think. Is that next on the list?
Yep. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. And I'm eager to get here because I have some definite favorites. And I guess we probably both would agree that mind mapping is probably one of the biggest keys to our success with the Wells Tech podcast. We've been mind mapping since day one, and that's using software from MindJet. And the software title is Mind Manager. It's not Pro or anything. I think it's just Mind Manager. And they have a web-based version and versions that work on mobile devices as well as the PC. And I'm not sure about Mac version. I think there is a Mac version
as
well.
I'm using the Mac version. It's not as good, but it is available.
Yeah, so the concept is basically to throw all your ideas somewhere and be able to easily move them around and arrange them and give them some hierarchy and things like that. And that's just what we do for every single show. We actually prepare for this. It may not always seem that way, but we throw all those notes in a mind map, and then we follow those notes as we talk through the show topics. And I would rank that very highly on my list, just because if I need to sit down and do something, that's going to be probably my go-to tool. If I need to think through a process or whatever, my mind just works in very good harmony with the concepts of mind mapping. It's just a good way for me to think and to get ideas down. So definitely high on my list.
Yeah, it's a very flexible application. I would agree there. I think there are if I'm not in a mind map, there are probably just a couple other places that I am during the course of a day. There's not a lot of, or the browser, of course, which we'll talk about in a minute. But one of those places that I'm in a lot is the Microsoft Office suite. We run the Office suite here in the Synod office, so I spend a lot of time in Outlook, which is where my calendar is, which is where my contacts are, and which is where my email is. And I hear a lot of people kind of knock Outlook and say, well, it's not that great a tool, blah, blah, blah. I guess I don't have any issues with it. I think it does exactly what I need it to do. It's a good communications tool. I can sort things. I can do everything I need. In fact, I wouldn't be able to operate without it. And I don't find that it is inhibiting at all. Along with that, the other kind of main things I kind of spend a lot of time in with the Office suite is obviously Microsoft Word. I do a lot of reports, and we're writing a book in it. The tool does what I need. I was a big WordPerfect guy. I don't know about you, Sally, back in the day, but when I first started in computers, WordPerfect was, I think, predominant. Now was dominant in the space. And there were some things you could do with WordPerfect that you can't do with Word. You get into the code and whatever, and I kind of missed that for a while. But now I'm at one with I'm at peace with Microsoft Word. It does not fight me like it used to, or I don't fight it like I used to. And then two other things that I use a lot in the Office suite are OneNote. Use that a lot. I knew I saw that on your list as well. And we've talked about OneNote. We use that for a lot of our project work, project resources, meeting notes, those kinds of things. And then OneDrive, which is our little corner of the world for file storage. I don't use PowerPoint as much. I use Excel a little bit, depending on what season it is. If it's budget season, I spend a lot of time in Excel. But it's usually Outlook, Word, OneNote, and OneDrive for me. How about you?
Yeah, definitely a big fan of all of those products, Martin. I think just have to tip my hat to Excel and its power. And every chance I get in there and use it, but it isn't quite as often as maybe I'd like. But yeah, if you're a numbers person or a data person, Excel is definitely the tool and very, very powerful. I think most of the time we just scratch the surface of what Excel can do for us. Yeah. But
you know, the a product that's kind of creeping up and getting a little bit more of our time, a little bit more of our attention, a little bit more use are the Google app stuff, though, too. I spend, you know, more time than I thought I would in Google Docs. You know, the Wells Hymnal Committee, we're always in Google Docs. That's just a good collaborative environment for everybody. We use it occasionally for some of the things for the Wells Tech Conference. We built that all on Google Apps, all of our scheduling stuff, and forms, whatever. A lot of my presentations now I'm using Google Slides. It's just an easy way to share. People can grab it, make a copy themselves. Just a good, solid product. Not a lot of bells and whistles, but I don't really use a lot of bells and whistles when I present. So I'd say Google Apps is, you know, definitely not as much of, I don't spend as much time in Google Apps as I do as the Office Suite, but I'd say it's a growing number.
Yeah, and among our listeners, I would guess certainly the schools are are moving much more predominantly towards Google Apps. Probably congregations are following because the office staff is shared in many of those scenarios, and so they want everybody to be in the same tool set and things. So I would say probably a lot are using it, and the price tag, if you're a Google Apps for Education school or Google Apps for business, nonprofits, congregation, price tag is free, so you can't beat that. But the Microsoft price tag for nonprofits is very, very affordable. So it's not a barrier like perhaps it used to be when you were buying, you know, full-fledged licenses. Instead, you're using this this online kind of combo license, so you get that collaborative environment as well as the desktop software if you want to install that for more features and things. So, yeah, lots of options there. I was kind of laughing as you were saying you live in Outlook. I guess many that watch the show know that I part-time work for MLC, and MLC is totally Google Apps. And so I live in Outlook for my sentence side, and I live in the Google Apps suite for email and collaboration and stuff on the MLC side. So, yeah, lots of uses for both tools.
So
I have other favorite software. Sorry.
Okay. Go ahead.
Go ahead. So other favorite software I just wanted to make a quick mention of on my desktop are two tools from a company called TechSmith out of Michigan. TechSmith has a product called Snagit, allows you to take screen captures and annotate them. They also have video capturing and saving and sharing is super easy. I use it not just for screen captures, but for annotating any type of image. So not ones that just generated off my screen, but any type of image. Very powerful image editing tool. A step down definitely from like a Photoshop or whatever, but it does plenty for me. Their other product that I really enjoy is a video production software called Camtasia. There is a Mac version as well, and Camtasia allows you to record video, record PowerPoints, include imagery and other types of media clips. You can mix in different audio files into your video and then ultimately push a button and produce it and be able to share it easily on the web. So very powerful video editing and creation tool in Camtasia Studio, both from TechSmith. Since they are good at software that takes screen captures and creates videos, they have a lot of great help in screen capture and video format. So it's really easy to get started. They'll give you a free trial for 30 days if you want to test the waters, and they also have special pricing for nonprofits. So lots of good things going on with TechSmith software.
I'm a fan as well. I go in streaks with Camtasia. I use it a lot when I'm teaching my online course for MLC, so I do a lot of screen capture for that. But beyond that, Snagit is you know, always probably something I use every day. Mm-hmm. So one of those tools that I always have loaded up, and they have a Mac and a PC version, and they both work, you know, really well for quick screen capture or just snapshot too. So
pictures worth a thousand words kind of thing, you know. Yeah. Communication these days with imagery is very powerful and time saving.
One of the neat things about Snagit is the ability to capture an entire web page, regardless of whether it's on the screen or not. So very often you can only do a screen grab of what's on the screen, but the page would scroll down, and you're getting more of these websites where they're expecting you to scroll to get all the information. And rather than kind of getting it in chunks, Snagit allows you to kind of push a button and allows you to grab the whole screen. So it's a great, great feature for that product. Just a couple other things that I use on the software side. Both you and I, Sal, use Trello. Now, we've mentioned Trello in the past. We had Julie Wagenknecht on the show a number of weeks back, and she was talking about project management in Trello, and that's what we use for project management, and I've encouraged churches to consider using it, and it seems to be a hit. And we, I think, I don't know if I could actually manage a project now without, you know, using the technologies that are available there. And it's for the free price tag, the free version is probably enough for a lot of organizations to get the job done. What do you like about Trello? Or do you?
I definitely do. It's a great way to organize things. So you have you have boards, and within boards you have lists, and then you have individual cards, which are basically individual tasks, and you can move things through the process by dragging cards to different lists. And so you can visually see the status of everything with this this interface that they give you. And also it's a really great communication tool, and you can go back and see the communication around a particular task easily. So you can @mention people, similar to what you might do on Facebook or Twitter, and they get notified right away when you do that, and just really powerful in kind of breaking down barriers with communication. So I've seen a lot of benefit for it.
Yep. Just looking at the clock, maybe we should get to, we only have a couple categories left here, but we need to get there. One of them is the good old browser. I use Chrome. How about you?
Yep, I'm a Chrome girl as well.
Why did you pick Chrome?
I like the interface. It's clean, and I like the speed of it as well. You can put it side by side with other browsers, and pages just load a lot faster, and it just seems more reliable. It does have a little bit of a drawback. Sometimes it eats up some behind-the-scenes resources that you may not be aware of, but in order to speed things up, it's loading a lot of things into your memory and stuff. But I haven't had very many detriments. So
two things I like about Chrome, which are not available on most of the other browsers. One, it is totally cross-platform. So if I'm working on a Mac or PC, I can have essentially the same experience because everything syncs. My favorites sync, the extensions sync. So it really doesn't matter whether I'm loading it up on whatever environment. If I just log in with my Chrome or my Google account, I'm going to have that same experience. So that's one thing. And the other are those extensions. They probably have a more robust, complete, extensive extensions store than anybody else. So if there is a plugin out there, it's probably going to be available on Chrome. So those are the two things that kind of keep me attached to Chrome. I think there are some other browsers maybe that are kind of catching up and maybe sometimes even faster in rendering, but they just can't beat, you know, those two things and the wealth of extensions that are available. So you've got Chrome up. What are some of those extensions or tools that you really have to have?
Jinx, I was going to ask you that question. Definitely have a few favorites in that category. One I think we'd share is LastPass, where remember one password and then it remembers the rest for you and fills in. I'm here on a Google page and it tells me I have 45 possible passwords for a Google page. So it's a good thing I have a password keeper to keep up with 45 Google passwords, don't you think? Yeah. A couple of others that I use, one is called Page Ruler. That's what I'm showing on my screen right now. It's a good web master kind of tool where you can just easily and quickly measure. Let's see if I can demonstrate. So when I click on page ruler, my mouse becomes kind of a crosshairs. And if I want to have an idea of what size an area of the screen is, I can just drag across it and it'll tell me up in the bar that it's about 142 by 121 or maybe 140 by 120 would be more accurate because I wasn't perfect with my dragging. So that's really nice to be able to just measure an area on the screen and get an idea of what image might fit there. I use that quite often actually. The other that I use is called Eyedropper, and it looks like an eyedropper, and when you turn it on, it allows you to pick up colors from the screen. So if you're trying to figure out exactly what color our WellsTech orange is, for instance, I can say to pick a color from the web page, and then when I mouse over, I'm not sure if you can see my mouse or not, but I'm hovering over the orange in the WellsTech orange, and when I click on it, it picks that color up and it's on the thing, and it tells me the hex code, the RGB, the HSL, even a color name, goldenrod, for our WellsTech orange. And so it's a very powerful and quick and easy way to pick up colors. One more, just to give you a good little monkey grin, is one of my favorite web sites, and they have an extension as well. It's pigmonkey.com. So if you need to do image editing, this is a great go-to site. It's super easy and fun and makes you smile, makes you want to come back and do it again. And with their extension, when you're on any particular web page, you can click the PicMonkey extension and it'll show you all the different images that are on that page, and you can select a particular image and take it right into the PicMonkey editor to begin editing. So super quick and easy. It'll also take screenshots for you and things like that. And the monkey gives you a little wink in the process. So three of my favorites, four counting LastPass.
Yep. You and I share LastPass. That's actually the first thing that I install when mm-hmm. I have to load up a new machine.
Because you need all your passwords.
Yep. The second thing that I install is Pinboard, and Pinboard is my bookmarking tool. So I have this usually set up, and it's probably the most pedestrian application that I use. It's all text. It's kind of like the Craigslist of shortcut sharing, but basically you just tag things. You can put them in categories and bundles. There's a little plugin in Chrome that allows me to tag anything I want, throws it in here. I can share them. I can keep things private. I can keep things public. I create things for the class that I teach. It's just an all-around simple little tool to use. It does cost, I think, $11 a year, but absolutely worth the price for me. And I went to this after Digo started charging nickel and diming you for different things. And although I still use Digo a little bit, I find that this does more, the things that I needed to do. The other extension that I install right away is something called Shareaholic. And Shareaholic is just a little plugin that allows me to be on any page that I want to share in some kind of format. So I just click on the little green button and I can share it to Facebook, Twitter, I can put it on my Pinboard, I can mail it, I can create a bit.ly link for it, I can post it to my blog, Google+, Yammer, Pinterest. Actually, I haven't tried that button yet, Sally. That's probably come as a surprise to you.
Get with the program, dude.
I can plug it into Microsoft OneNote. And it even gives me a shortened link that I could share to anybody as well. So that you can kind of see up here at the top, those are my first three extensions, LastPass, Pinboard, Shareaholic. And then I've got OneNote, the OneNote Clipper up here as well. So those are really essential to my browser productivity.
Good stuff. Moving right along, we should probably talk about mobile devices next.
Yep, last category, the devices awesome. That we use other than our computers that make us hopefully more productive. What do you got in your pocket or purse?
Laying right here on my desk is my iPhone 6S Plus, and it's new as of around Christmas time, I think, is when I got this. And it's funny, if I hand it to my son to answer a phone call or something, he says, "Wow, Mom, that's really wide. That's really big. It's really big in my hand." And it took me a while to get used to, but you know what, Martin? I'm not going to have any other picks in this category because it really made me not use my iPad very much at all. I like this size a lot. And what are you holding there?
Same thing.
Awesome.
It's the same thing. Mine's white. What did you get?
I think I got a space gray.
Yeah,
I think I did.
Yeah. But it's all about the case anyway. I mean, the phone's the phone. But
absolutely true.
It takes great pictures. And I think you're right. It does creep up toward the size where you're not using that middle ground tablet as much, especially if you have a kind of an iPad mini format or whatever. I still use the iPad 2 a lot, iPad 2 Air a lot, but mostly for YouTube videos, those kinds of things. I've used it for presentations. Sometimes I'll use it as a second screen. So it does have its uses, but I would totally agree with you. I think it has become less a player, you know, in the device mix with these larger screens. One thing that I do still struggle with, because I don't carry a purse, this is a little big for a pocket. I mean, I still put it in the pocket, but it's a little large. It's not as large as some, but that is still kind of the challenge. So
I've got a solution for you, Martin. Me and my brilliance, I had no clue I was doing this, but I picked out a nice blue case because I like blue. I've had blue on a lot of my devices. And it's a nice case. It slides in the middle to turn on. And I noticed that it said it had a kickstand. So I don't know if you can see that on the screen, but it has a nice little kickstand built in so I can, you know, prop it up to watch my YouTube videos or whatever it may be. But unbeknownst to me, it also came with a holster clip. And I'll have a link to this in the show notes. It's from a company called Platinum. And it's a really nice clip, so I can clip it in, and it has it, you know, I can wear it that way. I've learned later, I'm really slow, it took me a while, but it'll actually turn 90 degrees, so I can clip it either way. In addition, the clip actually has a kickstand built into it, so a second piece on the clip. And so I can, you know, I can put it in the stand with the screen facing outward and kickstand it that way as well. And I can do that either direction. So I can prop it up standing portrait or landscape. So a very versatile clip. It comes from Platinum, costs about $40. And I think it was really worth the price. I can drop it in my purse with that screen protection on and stuff. And really nice.
I think that would stop a bullet too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's kind of powerful stuff. So we won't try that bullet thing, though.
All right. So that's what we use each and every day. And I would say, for the most part, this is a pretty static list. It doesn't change. We didn't do everything. There's a few things in here that that we use, kind of we dip in once in a while. But I think the staples are the staples, and they've kind of worked well for us. So, again, your mileage may vary. We'll have all this stuff in the show notes if you're interested in exploring some of these things. Again, I would reiterate that it's worth kind of spending some time researching, and then ultimately allowing enough budget to buy something that's going to last and make you happy, you know, in your knowledge work. So yeah, just think about that as you kind of move forward into some of these new categories. Sally, news and tech.
Yep, very quickly we'll make mention of the fact that I came across a webinar that sounded interesting for those in the Google Apps for Education space. It's hosted by someone from the Google Apps for Education team, a conversation around the next phase of content in our classrooms. In the webinar, you'll hear and learn from three inspiring school districts across the U.S. Educators were selected because they are thought leaders in digital content, teacher-created materials, OER, and change management. So they're going to share their journeys, best practices, biggest challenges, lessons learned, and favorite resources. A few weeks ago when we had James and Jim from MLC on the podcast, James, I believe, made mention of the SAMR model and the fact that you don't want to just replace current practices with a newfangled technology. You actually want to extend and go further by using the technology to enhance your lessons and the learning that's going on in your classroom. And I think that's what they're getting at with this content 2.0 kind of title to this webinar. I think it'd be very interesting to sit in and just get some experience from those who have tried some of these newer things and in using technology in more advanced ways in the classroom. So we'll have a link in the show notes. It's a webinar that anyone can go to. The date is Tuesday, February 23rd, 1 to 2 p.m. I'm not sure if that's Central Time or not. I have to look, but perhaps it's adjusting for my time zone. It knows who I am.
I would say Google for Education in general is a tremendous resource for educators, even if you don't, if you are not in a one-to-one Chromebook situation, or even if you don't use Google Apps. They're kind of getting these great speakers in, these great topics that really talk about technology and education or educational technology. And a lot of these webinars, regardless of what tools you use, apply and are, you know, really thought-provoking stuff. And they're, I'd say they're by far and away the technology in education leader. They passed Apple, you know, a long time ago, and I think they're a great resource regardless. So.
Definitely. Time for some Wells Now.
Sure.
And in the Wells Now category, we wanted to make mention that our friends at Martin Luther College have a brand new redesigned website. It's at mlc-wells.edu. It's been live for all of about 9 or 10 days now, and we've settled in a bit, and I think you're going to be really happy with what you find there. One of the major emphases was to make the website mobile friendly. I think if you're designing at all for the web these days, that has to be a very high priority. And the site is definitely responsive, size as well on any size screen, and it has a lot of great information that we're bringing to the forefront as well. We wanted to bring our social channels in here because there's all kinds of things happening in those spaces as well, and so we've got those featured on the homepage and just lots more. We definitely invite you to come check it out over at mlc-wells.edu. There's a tour available if you want to kind of get your feet wet with it and figure out how things are organized, and check it out. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, and you're too humble to admit it, but Sal, you were a big part of that. Tip of the hat to your work there, your first serious foray into WordPress, right? How do you define the WordPress waters?
Very versatile. I think WordPress can do small sites and it can do giant college sites as well. So we actually have about 52, I believe, different branches of our site. We call them subsites, but they all have the same design and things. They appear seamless to all of our visitors, but it's big and powerful for the things that we need it to do.
Yeah, I heard a collective exhale when that site launched coming out of New Ulm. Human effort to kind of move that thing.
Yeah, we've actually been working with our web editors here on campus for over a year to prepare, to organize, and to actually do the transition, the move from the one site to the other. And lots of hours went into it.
So if you haven't checked it out, mlc-wells.edu. Mm-hmm. A shout out to our friends at Lakeside, Sally.
Absolutely. Caught this one in my Facebook feed, but recently they published that they have 150,000 views on their YouTube video channel. And in the last 365 days, their videos have been watched for 82,000 minutes. And they have 285 now subscribers to their channel. So that's because they're putting out a lot of cool content and they're doing it on a regular basis. So that's how to grow your channel, is to keep adding to it regularly. And then, share your videos, make them videos that people are interested in, and they'll subscribe, they'll see all your content and stuff. So a really great example for all of us as we are building our social channels. And just huge congratulations to Lakeside for the effort they've put into that. I think they have a class dedicated to video production there on campus. And I know we've featured them before. They do some some news items. They video produce a lot of their athletic events, parades, all kinds of things that they're participating in.
I think sometimes we focus too much on the Facebooks and Twitters and Instagrams, and we kind of forget about YouTube. It does take more work, but certainly there is evidence to suggest that, hey, there's value in being there, and obviously Lakeside has taken full advantage of that. And maybe we could probably ask the folks there, but probably a blessing to them in the fact that maybe it was a recruiting tool. So people are more aware of what the ministry is all about at Lakeside in Lake Mills. Definitely. Sally, should we move on to ministry resources?
Well, we should, and not to be a surprise to anyone, we have something to share from the blog Church Tech Today, a recent post titled Open Source Church Software Roundup.
Yeah, I found this the other day, and I thought that, let me actually share my screen here. You got it, or I can put it up here. Here we go.
We both could.
What was kind of surprising is that many of the items on this list I had never heard of. And open source is kind of a double-edged sword. You need to have some technical savvy to be able to put it in place and keep it safe and up to date, those kinds of things. But they do a nice job of touching on the major categories. So there's open source church management systems, media projection, member management. So there's something in each of those categories. They give a brief overview of what is available there, and obviously a link to the site. So if you are into open source or want to kind of test the waters there, this would be a good article to take a look at if you have a need in any of those categories.
And I would venture to make a prediction you might hear more about it on Wells Tech in the future as we look into some of those a little more deeper. So
I think so too. Yeah. Speaking of video, we have some featured videos this week.
We do. We want to feature a video from our friends at Lakeside Lutheran High School. Oh, recently had their 150,000th view of their videos. This one is one called Soaring to New Heights. Apparently, their twice as nice resale shop there in the Lake Mills area allowed them they funded for them a drone. So they have a flyover video with their very own drone, and it looks like a lot of fun. So we included this on our Wells Tech promo playlist. We have various playlists out on YouTube that you can reference. So if you're considering doing promotional type things for your church or school, there's other videos that are built there on that promo playlist as well. So check it out.
Very good. Sally, it was a lot of fun, and the fun doesn't stop there. We are gearing up for another book week. So we are up to chapter 6 with our book on project management for churches, schools, and faith-based organizations. We've entitled it With All Your Heart. And chapter 6 is all about volunteers. How to identify them, how to recruit them, how to organize them, how to manage them, how to thank them, all those kinds of things. It's not, and kind of a focus on some of the technologies that'll make all that a little bit easier. So we're trying to give all you project leaders out there some tools that will help you in that very difficult job. So we're having a lot of fun. We're nearing the end. I don't know how many chapters we have to go, but it's been fun so far, kind of exploring different aspects and the different dynamics of project management as a, you know, church style or school style, Christian organization style. So that'll be coming up next week.
And I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said, but absolutely.
I had fun. How about you?
Absolutely. That's the answer I meant to say. I had a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to next week. A quick plug that some of my friends from right here in New Ulm, St. Paul's in New Ulm, where they do a great job with member ministry, will be joining us to talk about coordinating volunteers.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yep. We try and do an interview for each of these chapters to some people on the front lines of project management. So look forward to hearing that. If you'd like to contribute to the show, we've got a community feedback focus show in a few weeks, and we'd love to have your feedback included. So if you go to wellstech.wells.net, You can view our show notes page and get all of the links there for the different social channels that we are tuned into, Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest, Instagram. They're all there. And just a little bit more of a tease, we're going to have an exciting announcement about our listserv coming up next week. So some changes in the air. We're going to be moving to a different model there and want you to be a part of that. So that and more coming up next week. Sally, thanks so much for your work and great job on that website. Keep it up.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, everybody, and we hope to see you next week. Bye-bye.